Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for Thursday, the 8th of July. We take on the issue of immigration this hour of the program. On Tuesday, the Obama administration arguing that only Washington can set the nation's rules for arresting illegal immigrants. Immigration enforcement policy targets dangerous aliens, including violent criminals, gang members, drug traffickers, and others who pose a danger to the national security and a risk to public safety. While the Arizona law would force federal officials to cope with a flood of illegal immigrants who pose no danger, they filed lawsuit against the state of Texas, urging a federal judge in Phoenix to block Arizona's law from taking effect later this month. We're going to hear two completely different points of view on this issue this hour of the program, and welcome your phone calls. I know there will be many of them. Our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Polls do show that a majority of Americans support Arizona's efforts to arrest more illegal immigrants. And politicians, as you know, have proposed similar provisions in many other states here in this country. Joining us the first half hour of the program is Michael Hethman, General Counsel for the Immigration Reform Law Institute in Washington, D.C. He helped Arizona draft the immigration legislation and calls the lawsuit that the federal government has filed an unprecedented power grab. Mike, thank you so much for being with us.
Glad to be here, Kathleen. I wish I was up in Wisconsin. My family's on vacation up in the Hartford area, and it sure must be nicer than down here in sweltering D.C. So.
Our first guest was from D.C. as well and said it was 103. I feel so sorry for you.
It's beautiful up there.
Well, go join your family in Wisconsin. It's perfect here, and tomorrow is going to be the most perfect summer day you can imagine.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it is. So tell me about your helped to craft the Arizona law. They came to you for advice on this. Was it a tricky one to put together, thinking that maybe you would face, I'm sure you thought about this, a federal lawsuit at some point?
Well, this statute didn't come out of, out of a vacuum, Kathleen. It's the sort of the culmination of at least six, some people would say 8 years of work.
Oh, really?
In Arizona, by the legislators down there, and the primary visionary is state senator and formerly state delegate Russell Pierce, and our advocacy group, we came into contact with Senator Pierce when he was a ballot chairman on a ballot initiative in 2003 in Arizona called Protect Arizona Now. And this was a historic moment in this sort of resurgent wave of state and local attempts to cooperatively enforce immigration law that we're seeing all the way across the country. I mean, we're seeing bills in Wisconsin, certainly.
Sure.
And what was so significant about what happened in 2004 was a ballot initiative, a question on immigration placed directly with the voters, running up against the opposition of virtually big everything in the state, big labor, big business, big employee unions, big religion, big agriculture, you name it, they all said the sky is falling. But the voters in the privacy of the voting booth, in every demographic, overwhelmingly approved this ballot initiative, and it sent shockwaves around the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only demographic that where it did not achieve an absolute majority, was among Hispanics, and there it was a plurality. I think 47% of the electorate supported the measure, despite all the scaremongering.
Yeah.
What our institute does is something what we call it's a term we take from the Pentagon called red teaming. We try to approach these measures because of the very, very delicate and intricate balance between a federal and state authority in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to, when legislators, you know, who state legislators and particularly local council members, you know, who don't have a lot of experience in this rather specialized area of constitutional law, they are not sure how far their state powers can extend. And they have the warning of the fate of Proposition 187 in California, which was nullified by a federal court. This was enacted back in the 1990s, and it's still on paper the quote-unquote toughest state immigration law in the country. But it was drafted in a way that did not pay very close attention to the terms and classifications of federal immigration law. And that really is the key. So we tried to tell these folks, look, we're going to look at this measure the way the very powerful legal lobbies and legal movements for the open borders groups and for the cheap labor lobbies. We'll look at this and we'll try and attack it, and we will try to the extent that we can to help you anticipate some of these approaches and perfect your draft legislation accordingly.
Mm-hmm. You heard the Attorney General yesterday, and let me just simplify this for a moment, but you can see where they're going with this, whose major concern was diverting federal resources away from dangerous aliens such as terrorism suspects and aliens with criminal records will impact the entire country's safety. Setting immigration policy and enforcing immigration laws is a national responsibility. You simply can't have 50 different ways of dealing with immigration.
Yes, we've read this through the lawsuit, and it's important to point out that this lawsuit is completely different in its theory and approach than the there's four or five pending challenges in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
The holder document, if you will, the Attorney General suit, it's an astonishing document, and it should be very disturbing to folks not only who are concerned with immigration but are concerned with the separation of powers in this country as well. It has the hallmarks of the most radical political appointees that have been embedded in various agencies of the federal government and the Obama administration. It's what is so disturbing about this, the Attorney General's and really the President's theory of this case, is that they are trying to get a federal court to accept the idea that Congress is not primarily responsible for immigration laws. In other words, Congress does not have what the Constitution considers plenary power over immigration, despite the fact that it's expressly stated in the Constitution and it's referenced in the lawsuit. What they are saying is that Congress merely provides a framework for immigration, and that unelected federal bureaucrats, the what they call the administrative agencies, have complete and unrestricted discretion as to whether or not to enforce any of the immigration laws. And not only do they have complete discretion in this area, both the civil and the criminal laws, and not only in the case of individual circumstances or individual hardships, which most people traditionally conceive of the idea of discretion in immigration law, but they are now claiming that it applies to the president's treatment of large populations and whole groups whole ethnic backgrounds of illegal aliens. They've completely dropped. There's not a hint, really, of any claim about racial profiling in this lawsuit, which, if you will recall, was what the president was supposedly outraged about in his his prior statements back in April and early May, when he was complaining that his kids were going to be picked up.
Yes.
Going to get an ice cream in downtown Phoenix, and these race card kind of comments. These are completely absent. It's completely dropped from the lawsuit. What they're saying now, basically, is that high-level political appointees in the Department of Homeland Security and, to a lesser extent, the Department of State and the Department of Justice have unfettered discretion as to how to enforce the immigration laws, as to who to allow into the country, who to not allow into the country, who to remove, under what conditions these individuals can conduct activities, et cetera, in the country. This is an astonishing constitutional claim. We believe that it's clearly unconstitutional, and based on our initial contacts, you know, the Congress is not in session. It was interesting that he didn't drop this suit until Congress had left town. That there is going to be an absolute outrage. I mean, it's an astonishing power grab. We haven't seen something like this. I cannot recall, a similar attempt by a president, and especially, by his administrative agencies to grab this much constitutional authority from Congress and ask a federal judge to invalidate it.
Mm-hmm.
The last time this happened, back in the 1990s, and it was the separation of powers issue came up, was when Congress attempted to delegate certain powers for review of individual removal cases to the federal government, but insisted that they retain sort of a legislative veto of this on a case-by-case basis. This was called the INS v. Chadha Supreme Court case. And the Supreme Court, very clearly laid out the principles for separation of powers. And they said this kind of delegation is, even voluntary, as it was in that instance, is by Congress, is impermissible. And here we have some radical bureaucrats claiming that they can do this, whether Congress has expressly agreed to it. It's not.
Does the Constitution, would you say, speak clearly to the issue of immigration? Where does it speak about immigration?
It speaks about immigration in Article 1, which sets forth the powers of Congress. So, Article 2 sets forth the powers of the president, and the authority to establish what's called a uniform rule of naturalization is one of the enumerated powers of Congress. What the Obama administration has now proposed is something that we're trying to think of a name for it because it's so disturbingly novel. They're calling it a preemption by omission, I think is where you're calling it. What they are saying is that where Congress, in enacting immigration laws, has not addressed an issue, for example, the issue of whether it's unlawful for illegal aliens to, let me put it this way, it's unlawful to punish illegal aliens for working without authorization. Where, in other words, where the statutes are silent. The Obama administration's new position in this lawsuit is that Congress has preempted the field, and this is an astonishing statement for persons who are familiar with the constitutional jurisprudence in this area, because the leading and still valid case is called Dekanis v. Bica, and it comes from California in the mid 1980s, and it very clearly said that. That states like Arizona have concurrent jurisdiction unless Congress has expressly excluded them from the field. And we have plenty of examples in the law where Congress has done that, expressly excluded the states from the field. Well-known example is the provision in the employer sanction laws that says that states cannot impose criminal penalties or criminal sanctions on employers who hire illegal aliens, that only the federal government can do that. That's an example where Congress has spoken clearly. But with this radical new a preemption through attrition doctrine that the president and the attorney general have unveiled in full form in this astonishing lawsuit. Basically, it says, you know, and you combine that, let me put it this way, the significance is you combine that with their idea that they have complete and unfettered discretion as far as their own actions. What the bottom line is they're saying is that immigration law, the formulation of immigration law, is a question of political policy by these appointed agency heads and bureaucrats, and that really Congress really has no more role. The states and local governments have no role whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Or are they saying, Congress, you need to take this up as an issue? This is your responsibility. You haven't done anything on it for a long time. It's reached a point of crisis in this country. Do something.
That would make sense. You know, and it's certainly a valid concern, but it's not what is being said in black and white in this lawsuit.
Okay, let's.
This is something you would see in some of the most radical corners of radical law schools in what they call critical race studies programs. It's just an astonishing theory, and it's very disturbing to see it thrust into the mainstream in this way.
Let's take some phone calls. We're talking about immigration and the lawsuit that was filed by the federal government against the state of Texas on Tuesday of this week, announced by Attorney General Eric Holder. Our number is 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Mike Hethman. He is general counsel for the Immigration Reform Law Institute in Washington, D.C. He helped Arizona draft the immigration legislation. Let's go to Rick is our first caller from Port Washington. Hi, Rick.
Hi there. I find it ironic that the Justice Department is claiming that the Arizona law will divert them from searching out terrorists and other hardcore criminals, but at the same time, they've dropped the case in Philadelphia against the new Black Panther Party recently, who were charged with intimidating white voters trying to vote at a ballot place, a place for voting. And they don't have any justification for that other than to say, well, maybe that's the wrong kind of civil rights to try and support in the way of white voters being able to vote. I know that's not directly on the topic, but that Justice Department, as the speaker says, certainly has skewed things towards the left, or, as you said, more radical interpretation of law.
Mike.
Yes, I would have to agree with that. The fallacy in the this claim about restricting resources is this, when you're making the argument about terrorism, foreign terrorists, and this is certainly true of the record with the 9/11 terrorists, for example, and the World Trade Center of terrorists in 1993. Terrorists are fish that swim in the sea of the illegal immigrant communities and populations. Terrorists do not establish themselves out in outside of major immigrant and especially illegal immigrant enclaves. And the idea that if you can try and separate anti-terrorist work from enforcement of our laws against illegal immigration is a fallacy, because what you have as a consequence is that what you could call it is sort of the let's profile grandma at the airport syndrome, where the government says we're not going to enforce the laws against illegal immigration because that's discriminatory. We instead are going to expand our investigatory powers to look into the lives of every citizen, because under the theory that you can't tell an illegal immigrant from a citizen, I mean, it's again part of this mentality of this astonishing mentality of centralizing power in this area that just seems to be typified by this federal lawsuit.
Thanks, Rick, for the call. John in Eagle River. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good. Mike, I think your 15 minutes of fame for having helped draft this law will even be less than 15 minutes, because my view is that with the lawsuits brought against it, it will never be applied, just like 187 in California. Interestingly, I live, in full disclosure, in the interest of full disclosure, I live in Mexico 8 months a year. I work with many undocumented workers who have come back to Mexico. I work with undocumented workers who live up here. I find that a lot of the arguments that Arizona uses, and even the federal government uses, about drug trafficking and terrorists to be ridiculous. All the terrorists that have attacked us had visas and came in legally. They didn't come across the desert into Arizona. The other thing, I had an experience recently in the town of Morelia. I was stopped by a policeman for not wearing my seatbelt. He wanted to actually shake me down for a bribe, which he did, in fact, get from me. I'd rather pay 200 pesos than a 1,000 peso ticket. But anyway, he said if the Arizona law is applied, that the police throughout Mexico will stop every gringo-looking person throughout the country and ask them for their papers. If they don't have them, they'll take them to jail. And so it's going to create a war between the countries that we absolutely don't need. And frankly, in my view, what we need up here is more Mexican-Americans working rather than fewer. They work in all the dairies in the country. They work in all the meatpacking. They do all the work that us white folks aren't trained to do anymore. And it's without them financing our economy and spending their money here, this country's economy would be in the toilet. It actually, in California, 187, one of the reasons that never got applied is they realized what it would do to the economy in California if all the Mexicans left, and then what it would do to the rest of the economy in the states, because the economy in California is bigger than all the economy in all the other states.
Mike.
Two responses. One, that, you know, the comment that we need cheap, exploitable labor because, you know, real Americans won't do these jobs. So the same arguments, it's essentially the same argument that was used for slaves and child labor and the exploitation of women. It's simply, if you want to live in an exploitative, a society with huge differences in socioeconomic status. Yes, I mean, there's examples around the world where what this gentleman's vision of our country should be is operative. You know, I can think of South Africa or Brazil or Pakistan. Now, on the point of Mexican immigration law and the Mexican rule of law issues, you know, Morelia is a beautiful city. I've been there many times. I love the countryside in the state of Morelia, and Michoacán have, you know, many happy memories of my time spent there as well. But the fact is that Mexican immigration law, the Ley de Población, is one of the most xenophobic and racist immigration regimes in the entire world. I mean, the Chinese, the North Koreans can't hold a candle to some of the astonishing requirements in Mexican immigration law. You know, in Mexico, U.S. citizens are completely forbidden from participating in any kind of what we would call First Amendment or political advocacy activities at all. Mexico does not provide for employment-based or even really family-related immigration to the sense that we understand it in the United States. Mexico's whole immigration system is based on sort of a xenophobic reaction to the United States that arose during the Mexican Revolution before the First World War, which placed into power one of the longest one-party regimes in modern history. So for someone to say, oh, the Mexicans are going to stop every American for his papers if SB 1070 comes through is absurd. I mean, the Mexicans have these powers already, and they abuse them at will, and that's why we have such a problem. Mexico is not a poor country in terms of cultural heritage, natural resources, or anything else. I mean, but it is a failed state in terms of the rule of law, and that really is the underlying national security concern, not the fact that although it is happening that small numbers of third country national terrorists or subversives may be entering the United States, under the assistance of alien smuggling cartels.
Mike, thank you so much for being with us. Our guest this first half hour, Michael Hethman, General Counsel for the Immigration Reform Law Institute in Washington, D.C. He helped draft the Arizona law and the federal government, in case you missed this news somehow, I'm sure most of you didn't, you know what's going on, has sued the state of Arizona over this law. We have a different point of view now. Kevin Johnson is joining us, Dean and Professor of Public Interest Law and Chicano Studies at the University of California, Davis. He was a member of candidate Obama's immigration policy group and says the federal government makes a powerful argument that there must be one national immigration law, not a patchwork of 50 states having their own immigration laws. Our phone number remaining the same, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. You can follow us on Facebook and become a fan if you'd like to. We're all kind of talking to each other now, which is great. That's the Kathleen Dunn Show at Facebook. D-U-N-N is how you spell that last name, D-U-N-N. Again, talk@wpr.org is what you can use here on our email address as well. And joining us now is Professor Kevin Johnson. Hello, Professor Johnson. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, our guest, essentially the last half hour, he said a lot of things, but he said that this is an unprecedented power grab that's going on. We have unelected federal bureaucrats who are coming up with our immigration policy. It is the purview of Congress, really, and they simply can't take that authority away from Congress. It is appalling, according to our other guest.
Oh, well, that's interesting. It's an interesting and a different perspective on the matter. I think the basic framework is pretty much laid out, that the federal government has the power over regulating immigration. That power primarily, as I guess that guest suggested, is in Congress, but the Congress gives the enforcement authority to the executive branch, as in any other law. And the executive branch has the power to enforce the immigration laws passed by Congress. Traditionally, the power of the state and local governments has been very limited with respect to immigration. The issue historically has been framed as this. Immigration has foreign policy consequences. It deals with nationals of foreign countries. It should be dealt with in a uniform national way. That's why we have a uniform rule of naturalization that is required in the Constitution, and the same kind of reason we have a uniform rule, for naturalization is why we have a uniform set of rules for immigration, admissions, and removals. So I think that basic framework, very few people who are familiar with the law would dispute that, really.
Mm-hmm. Does all of this point to the fact that Congress really needs to come up with some kind of bills, a huge amount of attention paid to this issue, that we have problems now in many states trying to emulate Arizona simply because what's coming out of Congress is not very clear?
Well, I think it's not just that. I mean, we've spent a good deal of this new century dealing and thinking about and discussing proposals for immigration reform at the federal level. And there have been a number of proposals. There was a House bill passed in December 2005, the Sensenbrenner bill that was viewed as too draconian and provoked protests in the spring 2006. There's a Senate bill that was referred to as comprehensive immigration reform in the summer 2006 that failed. We have two proposals, one in the Senate, one in the House now, on the table about comprehensive immigration reform. And we, as a nation, we haven't done anything yet to reform immigration laws. And I think most people, both on both sides of sort of the political spectrum, think that we need to reform the immigration laws. But to this point, we haven't. And I think that it has caused frustration at the state and local levels. And we're seeing increasing numbers of state governments entering into immigration. Actually, just last night, a suburb of Birmingham, Alabama, passed a law similar to the Arizona law.
Oh, really?
So it's really percolating, and at the state and local level. And I do think that the president is correct, and many critics of Congress are correct that it's necessary to act. I hope that we can in the very near future. And if we don't, we're going to see some more efforts by state and local governments to intervene. We're going to see more heated debate. We're going to see more frustration before we see positive developments.
You know, I'm a little bit unclear. Maybe you are too. But when the governor of Arizona said that the law requires police to consider other factors along with race in identifying a suspected undocumented immigrant, I've never heard this explained very fully. What is she talking about, other factors along with race?
Well, I think there's a Supreme Court decision from the 70s where the Supreme Court held that you could not rely on Mexican appearance alone in making an immigration stop. You could rely on Mexican appearance along with a number of other factors, like if somebody's trying to evade the Border Patrol, if somebody is driving too fast or driving too slow, or there are other indications, perhaps, that they are involved in a smuggling operation. But I do think that Border Patrol officers are trained to look at signs of smuggling, signs of trying to enter illegally through ports of entry, in ways that local police aren't necessarily trained. I think Governor Brewer was fairly clear. She wasn't sure what the officers would look for in making that determination, and I'm not sure that the officers themselves would know what they would look for, and that creates the kind of discretion in the police that people fear will result in massive racial profiling. And when you hear the Latino community in Arizona, but also throughout the United States, complaining about racial profiling and the potential for it, that's because they don't know what you're going to be looking for, local police, if you're looking for undocumented immigrants. And the governor was unclear, and it's a very sensitive issue, obviously, especially a sensitive issue in Arizona, given that there have been numerous claims of law enforcement abuse of the civil rights of immigrants and Latinos generally. You probably have heard of Sheriff Joe Arpaio, known as colloquially is America's toughest sheriff, who's sheriff of Maricopa County and has done things like required detainees to wear pink underwear and to be outside in 100 degree plus heat. And so this is, this concern with racial profiling builds on a history in Arizona of civil rights concerns.
Mm-hmm. So you would actually have to, I don't understand why they're not doing this as a racial profiling bill, because to be fair about the whole thing, you'd have to stop if you were going to stop somebody for going too slow or going too fast or whatever. There's a possibility that all of the people, white or black or Hispanic, could be here illegally, right? You'd have to have everybody would be required to carry identification papers, and everybody would be asked if you are a citizen. Otherwise, you're singling out a group of people.
Especially if you're doing it on something as arbitrary as Mexican appearance.
Yes.
is a very broad category, and is actually, if you talk to any Mexican American, has very little meaning, given that people in Mexico, you know, their stereotypical Mexican appearances, perhaps, but there are Mexicans who are fair complected with blonde hair and blue eyes, and it's a very complicated sort of culture, just like ours in society. And to think that, you know, you could tell whether somebody's documented or not by their physical appearance, even as one factor, is troublesome to many people. So I think that it is hard coming up with a system that treats people fairly and equitably without, you know, relying on so-called statistics to justify police action.
Is this a pretty clear-cut case, do you think?
The federal claim,
yes,
claimed by the department, I think it's a fairly clear claim. I mean, the brief in the complaint filed by the Department of Justice, I was actually quite impressed with, and I have to say that I tend to be fairly critical of the Department of Justice's work in immigration cases. But this one seems to be fairly clear cut. You've got the federal government with a comprehensive immigration law. We may as a nation, you know, claim that it is not perfect and it needs to be revised, but it is the federal immigration law, and the states shouldn't be tinkering in something that can affect foreign relations between the United States and other countries. It already has. The Arizona law already has. And, you know, there's just not room in our constitutional democracy for the states to have 50 different state immigration laws and to enlist local police without training to enforce the federal immigration laws. We have a border patrol. We have immigration and customs enforcement. Some people complain about how they do their job, but they're trained. They're supposedly the experts, and they have supervision in ways that state and local police wouldn't when it comes to immigration enforcement. So I think pretty clear cut legal issues. It's a what's called a federal preemption claim, that, you know, the federal law preempts state laws in this area. And you can't have a state foreign policy either. You know, you can't have a state, you know, deciding it's going to boycott Burma.
Oh, that's an interesting way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is a very similar issue. And in the past, my home state, California, decided in the 1990s to try to get involved in immigration. We passed what was known as Proposition 187. That would have thrown undocumented children out of the public schools, would have denied them public services. And a federal court struck down that law on federal preemption grounds. So I think the Department of Justice claim is a valid one, a straightforward one. And it's based in the law. And it's funny how so many Arizonans are claiming, you know, we just want the law to be followed. Well, that's what the Department of Justice is saying. Mm-hmm. We just want the law to be followed.
Let's go to phone calls. Rick in Waukesha. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I'm not really too concerned about the law itself. I'm more concerned about the precedent it might set. It appears to me that they're setting this up as a national security issue, and they want to use it to selectively enforce immigration laws and not have anybody capable of challenging it. Right now, we've already got the Attorney General's office making decisions on what laws to enforce and what laws not to enforce. They should enforce them or repeal them, period. Thank you.
Professor?
Sure, I agree with that, but there's a balance in a decision on how to enforce and how to allocate your prosecutorial resources. You might decide that some enforcement, you might want to focus on big-time smugglers in your immigration enforcement as opposed to, you know, a single undocumented immigrant. And actually, you know, the federal law doesn't even make it a crime to be undocumented. That's another area where the Arizona law tries to criminalize something that's not criminalized under federal law. So I think that the claim that the Arizona law basically is trying to enforce a law that's on the books is not quite right. Because Arizona law adds quite a number of things to the federal law and is different from the federal law. So it's not just a case where we want to enforce federal law, and that's the problem. At the same time, the federal government and federal prosecutors all the time makes decisions, and local DA's offices make decisions about what to focus their scarce enforcement resources on. Are we going to focus on employers? Are we going to focus on traffickers of immigrants? Are we going to enforce on the undocumented worker? It's an issue for the federal enforcement authorities, and it's not an issue we just should apply, enforce all the laws all the time, every place, in every instance. That's not how any law is enforced, and to think it's that way is not quite realistic or practical.
More phone calls in a moment. 800-486-8655 is our number, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kevin Johnson, Dean and Professor of Public Interest Law and Chicano Studies at the University of California, Davis, is our guest. He was a member of candidate Obama's immigration policy group. And we're talking about the federal government suing Arizona over their immigration law. Our next caller is Mike from Milwaukee. Hello, Mike.
Hi. Hi. Well, President Obama's in trouble. He stuck his political neck out there. He's liable to get it chopped off. The fact is that the majority of people in this country want strict immigration law. And by him coming across when the Congress isn't in session merely tells me that Congress didn't want to even be associated with this issue. That this is a problem now that he's going to have to face, that a lot of people that support him are not going to support him anymore. As long as he keeps this up, he's on a downhill slide. He's liable to crumble a whole deck of cards on the table. In other words, the leftist movement in this country is liable to come to a halt.
Professor Johnson.
I think it is a tough political issue for the president. At the same time, while there are some people who don't want immigration to be touched and want the law to be enforced as it currently is on the books, there are many people, including a large segment of the Latino community, that strongly supported President Obama and strongly supports and demands immigration reform. And so there are conflicting pressures, and I agree that the president is in a tough place. I think at some point in the future we have to address immigration reform one way or another. Maybe it's more enforcement. That may not be what I prefer, but I think that something has to give when it comes to immigration. We have to figure out how to make our system work, because as most people would appreciate now, it's not quite working the way that would be ideal.
And it is such a complicated issue. People want to just sort of pick somebody and blame them when you've got the economy in Mexico, you've got corruption in Mexico, you've got drugs involved here, you've got people who want a better life for their families. It's not a very easy issue.
And no, I think that's exactly right. And you also have employers who want immigrant labor in the United States. You have a case currently pending in the United States Supreme Court involving a previous immigration law that denies business licenses to the employees of undocumented immigrants, that the Chamber of Commerce has challenged, sort of a bastion of business. And the bottom line is this, and one of the reasons that immigration is so complicated is we're talking about labor migration. We're talking about people coming here for jobs. And when people come here for jobs, there's somebody who's hiring them. There are businesses that are hiring them. There are people that benefit from their labor. Businesses profit from their labor. We as consumers also benefit from lower prices, for example, for produce and things like that. So I think that it is a very complicated economic issue. And you mentioned some of the other economic issues. There are some push factors because of the Mexican economy. Especially after NAFTA, that have encouraged and fueled migration. And at the same time, you have the magnet of jobs here. I think that it's not even a clear Democratic-Republican issue. We have, I think, President Bush was pushing immigration reform. He had some business interests in mind, but I also think that he understood that immigration deals with the migration of labor. It is a very complicated issue that's not red state, blue state, mm-hmm. Democratic, Republican.
Right. Thank you, Mike, for your call. We go next to Andrew from Superior. Hi, Andrew.
Hello. I just want to say, regardless of all the talks about economics and stuff, if we focus at the issue on hand, this is a very racist law. Like you guys were talking about earlier, I mean, what factors are they going to look for? That Jan Brewer can't explain it. She just fumbles over her words when she's asked about it. You can't just pull somebody over and look at them and decide, is this person an illegal immigrant or not, without racial profiling. It's just impossible. I mean, what are you going to look at their shoes? What kind of shoes are they wearing?
No, I agree, and that's one of the real reasons why the Arizona law is so controversial, is that some folks feel that it's just racist and discriminatory and would give a license to police to engage in a practice that many believe they already engage in. That's racial profiling. And I think that's exactly the reason you see such an outcry from the Latino community and from the immigrant rights community. And it's not a response to say, we're not racist, we're just against illegals. There are communities that feel threatened by the Arizona law, and we have to come up with a system that has legitimacy among immigrant communities, citizen communities, and minority communities, as well as the rest of the public at large, if we want to have a system that's respected, that's adhered to, and is deserving of the protection of the rule of law. Unfortunately, and I'm not saying it's always the case, but the discussion of immigration often raises issues of race and racism and cultural difference, and the fact that you know, many of the people who immigrate today are people from the developing world, not all of them, of course, but a portion of them, and that makes some people feel uncomfortable to change, uncomfortable to new languages, uncomfortable to different religions than some of us are used to. And that's something that we as a nation historically have dealt with, sometimes with ups and downs, but we've dealt with well in the long run. You know, it's one of the things we deal with now when we talk about immigration. It tends to be a discussion of, you know, not just illegal immigrants, not just immigrants, but oftentimes it's a discussion of the Mexican community as a whole in the United States.
Why didn't the federal government make racial profiling the basis of their lawsuit?
Well, I think that's a good point, and I thought some about that, because the complaint basically makes a sort of straightforward federal preemption claim. And I think the reason that claim is made is you don't have to raise the racial profiling issue, which creates all kinds of difficulties, legal difficulties. You got a very straightforward, very winnable, if not already won, legal argument based on, you know, this is the power of the federal government, state shouldn't be involved. And, you know, some of the issues of race are raised in the lawsuits brought by, among others, the American Civil Liberties Union and the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund.
I see.
Here we have a fairly straightforward legal issue that the federal government, through the Department of Justice, is claiming that the state is intruding on the federal government's prerogative.
Andrew, thanks for the call. John in St. Germain, hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
It's interesting, the idea of looking at the shoes, is that such a bad indicator? Because people who swum the river and walked through the desert, their shoes are pretty much trash by the time they get here. Hmm. But in any event, it seems to me that the last caller or the last speaker, your last guest, talked about people being exploited from lower salaries. My experience in working with undocumented is they get the same salaries as everyone else. In fact, some of them get better salaries because they work harder. And my biggest problem, I guess, with our law enforcement at the border is that we tend to hire customs agents that are either seriously white redneck folks or Chicanos who absolutely hate the Mexicans. And so the whites who come across the border who speak Spanish to them, I'm one of them, and I speak better Spanish than the Chicanos, so they don't like me. Mm-hmm. And they just, they give so much crap to everybody coming across and going through customs that it's outrageous. And so our hiring policies of customs people need to be taken a very hard look at to have any kind of new immigration law be effective.
And I think there's a lot of truth to that. We have a history, and in the history, the old Immigration and Naturalization Service had a very bad reputation in terms of service in the treatment of the people that came into contact with it, and that continues with the Department of Homeland Security and the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Authorities and the Border Patrol Authorities. That they're often criticized, especially for being rude, being overly tough, being unfair, being discriminatory in their conduct towards people. And one of the issues, and I'll give the border enforcement folks the benefit of doubt at some level, we have hired an incredible number of border enforcement officers over the last 15 years, and there have been claims, and some of them make some sense to me, that we haven't had the chance or the ability to offer the proper training that is necessary to engage in that difficult job task or set of tasks, really. So I think that we have to, I mean, focusing on hiring and who you hire is always important, but focusing on training and making sure that people get the message what their job's supposed to be and how they're supposed to work with the public as opposed to hassle the public is important.
Professor Johnson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Professor Kevin Johnson, Dean Professor of Public Interest Law and Chicana Studies at the University of California. Thanks to Chrissy Pease and Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda for on-air production as well and for your calls, as always.